Thank you, Keith, for that prayer. Appreciate it. I trust that God will indeed give wisdom and understanding as we look into the Word together this morning. Greet each one of you in Jesus' name. It's a privilege to be with you, a part of God's family, worshiping together in this beautiful Lord's Day morning. To begin the message this morning, I'd like you to turn to Psalm chapter 51, or Psalm 51, not necessarily the chapter, but Psalm 51. Maybe a lot of you right away recognize what that psalm is. It's a cry of David, a prayer of David. And I'm going to read a few verses here eventually, but just like you to think a little bit about what has taken place in David's life. We all know David as a man of God. The Bible would portray him as a man after God's own heart, and he indeed was that. Was he perfect? And obviously not. He had his failures, and probably the one most severe failure in his life was his murder of Uzziah and taking his wife, committing adultery with her. And so he managed to cover it for a while, but he eventually was made known that this sin has been well known. And Nathan comes to him and he says, gives him this little story of a man with one sheep and another man with 100 sheep. And the man with 100 he's going to be host of a wayfaring person. And he, instead of taking one of his own, he goes to the man with one sheep and takes his lamb. When Nathan finished that story, it seemed like that suddenly dawned on David what Nathan was pointing at. And he realized his sin. And Psalm 51 is a prayer following that. And I'm just going to read verse 1 to verse 6. He says, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is ever before thee. Against thee, thee only, have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest. Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Behold, thou desirest truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part thou shalt make me to know wisdom." Just going to stop reading there a little bit. You get the little bit the feeling of David as he felt the weight and the shame of that sin coming down over him. And there's a desire within him to be clean, to be free. It seems to me there's a realization within him that he misstepped, he misjudged. Somehow he acted out of wisdom, not in wisdom. He says, "I was shapen in iniquity. I was conceived in sin. But you, God, you desire truth in the inward parts." And then he makes this statement, "And in the hidden part thou shalt make me to know wisdom." David, as he recognized his sin and the guilt that came with that, he said, "Lord, make me to know wisdom." And I'm not sure how you feel this morning. Are you interested in wisdom? Do you desire to know wisdom? Does it seem too abstract to try to engage with? Is it too hard to follow? David says, make me to know wisdom. But I trust that this morning you are interested enough in wisdom that you will pursue it long before you wake up in adultery, or long before you wake up in any of other sinful vices. It'd be interesting to know how many of you enjoy doctrinal studies or doctrinal messages. Maybe a lot of us like practical messages, something that we can get a hold of more easily. But I have a feeling I could really bore you this morning if I would say that the title of my message is The Doctrine of Wisdom. How many of you would go with that? The Doctrine of Wisdom. Sounds a bit boring. Well, tonight we have someone coming. He's going to preach on what is the world. And in all reality, this morning we're going to be looking at what is wisdom. So I guess we could use that, what is wisdom. But I'd like to use David's words here in verse 6. Make me to know wisdom for a title. Make me to know wisdom. I like it because it's more personal. There's a relationship here. It's relational. There's something that you can engage with. Now, you young men, if you're 16, 18, 20, most likely you're thinking of life and you're thinking of marriage, and you can't really ignore the lady's side. But you wouldn't really think of pursuing life with somebody without first learning to know them. And to the married men here this morning, you have vowed your life to your wife only after sufficiently learning to know her. At least I hope you did. And now, after years of living together and dwelling together, you have become more alike. And some people say that even married couples start to look alike. And I think that's a little bit maybe far-fetched, but sometimes I think I can see it. But in all reality, you do become alike. You learn to understand each other. And there's times where maybe you both go to say the same thing at the same time. Or you know what one's response will be to you because you have learned to know them. See, there's a relationship here where you have learned to know them and they know you, and you can dwell together. And that's a little bit the framework that I want to try to portray here this morning with wisdom. You could turn to Proverbs. Jordan had us here this morning, and we're going back to Proverbs again. We're going to dust off these pages a little bit. Proverbs chapter 8. We're going to use this as a skeleton for our message this morning. A lot of the chapters here in Proverbs, at least the first 10 chapters, have a lot to do with wisdom. But Proverbs 8 is what I've chosen to use here this morning. And I have 10 points on what wisdom is. And we'll try to keep moving through them fairly rapidly. I don't think I'm going to take time to read the whole chapter. We're going to be looking at the chapter in its entirety, so I don't think we're going to take the time to read it here consecutively at the beginning. I think we'll just take the verses as we go through the points. Make me to know wisdom. Verse 1 is the very first verse. It's the verse for my first point. It says, doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? Doth not wisdom cry? So for point number one, I have wisdom is a promulgating persona. Now, we'll try and break this down a bit, but to promulgate, if you would go into the city, and some cities you could find this, especially in other countries, but maybe even here in America, you would go into the city, you likely would see some huckster standing on a street corner shouting at the top of his voice. And maybe he has a sign, or other countries, maybe he has some wares sitting on a table he's trying to sell. And he's using all the energy he got, all the voice that he has, to try to get your attention. And not only yours, but everyone within earshot. That's what it means to promulgate. He is trying to make something known to as many people as he can by open declaration of something. And so, that's what a little bit the picture we get here in verse 1. Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? Wisdom is not some passive... Well, let's think about the persona a little bit. The persona is a character or a personality that a writer projects, and that's very clear here in the book of Proverbs. Solomon portrays wisdom as a feminine figure. And so I think it's safe to say that wisdom is a persona. Wisdom is a promulgating persona. She's somebody that's not quiet. She cries. She's not standing in a corner or in the closet. She's not a introvert, but she's calling out. And Solomon writes this as wisdom, as someone who wants to engage with you. She cries, she puts forth her voice, and I'm just going to flip back here to the first chapter in Proverbs where we have this again. Wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief place of concourse, in the openings of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, how long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. And you don't get the picture of wisdom being this quiet, out of the way, come find me type of person. She is rather out front, wanting to engage. Solomon writes these chapters as an appeal to his son. He addresses his son multiple times. My son, attend unto my wisdom. My son this and my son that. And here in chapter 8 and a few of the other chapters, we have wisdom as Lady Wisdom. There's feminine pronouns. It refers to wisdom as she, as her. Take her, keep her. There is appeal. Wisdom has appeal. You're able to have a relationship with Lady Wisdom. And the alternative, sadly, is Lady Folly. And we'll touch on that just a bit later. Number 2, wisdom is the primary call that imposes a personal response. We're going to read verse 2 to verse 5. She standeth in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be of an understanding heart. Wisdom is the primary call that imposes a personal response. Her cry is to the sons of men in verse 4. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. So we said that lady has, she's crying, she's out front, making herself known. And you'll have to either ignore her or accept her. could say she's crying at the gates, at the entering of the city, at the coming in at the doors. And back in those days, the city gates were a place of prominence. You would enter in through the city gates, and immediately you would find a circle of men, likely officials, elders, other prominent citizens of that place. It was a place of news, a place of drawing up and enacting city policy. And Solomon is writing that this is where you're going to find wisdom. As soon as you come in through the door, as soon as you come into the gate, you're going to find wisdom. There's going to be a cry there that you're going to either have to accept, acknowledge, or you're going to have to ignore it. And I would suggest this morning that the gates and the doors are symbolic of opportunity. There is the gate of a new day. There is the doorway of your work or your occupation. There is the entrance of the ball game. There is the coming in of conflict and tension. And in each of those cases, there is wisdom. She'll be there and she'll be crying. She'll have something to offer you, and you either have to accept her or ignore her. The choice is yours. We can follow and embrace her, or can we reject her. And if you recall with me, when Stephen was being martyred, and they were, it was before he was being martyred, he was preaching in the synagogue, and I think it was the synagogue of the Libertines in that setting. It was people in the synagogue that were hearing Stephen preaching said that they could not resist the wisdom with which he spake. And so there, those people were confronted with wisdom, and instead of following it and embracing it, they rejected it. And it drove them to drag Stephen out of the synagogue and haul him off to the place where he was condemned. They stirred up a riot and falsely accused him, all in an effort to quiet the voice of wisdom. So how will you respond to wisdom this morning? She's there. You cannot say she is not there. You either need to follow her and embrace her or reject her. Number three, wisdom is the voice of truth. Let's read verse 6 through 9. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Wisdom is the voice of truth. To me, I see wisdom here in these verses advocating for things of excellence. She says, I will speak of excellent things. My mouth shall speak of truth. And that embodiment, I believe, is our consciousness, our awareness of all that is true, all that is right, all that is excellent. And I believe each one of us is given that awareness, that perception. That's that wisdom, that voice of truth within us that's saying, this is right, this is true, this really is the excellent way. That's the voice of wisdom. I'd like you just to flip back to Job for a few verses. Job 28. This is God's words. Well, I'm not so sure if it is God's words. I think I was looking at another passage where God was speaking. I'm not quite sure on this, but look at verse 12. We have this question, but where shall wisdom be found, and where is the place of understanding? And it goes on to say that man doesn't know. The deep says it's not in me. The sea says it's not in me. You're not going to be able to buy it with gold or with money. And then down in verse 20, whence then cometh wisdom? And where is the place of understanding? Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air. And this sounds a bit contradictory to what we were saying of wisdom crying. But the question really is, where can you go to find the source of wisdom, or the beginning of it, maybe we could say. Verse 23 says, God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. For he looketh to the ends of the earth and seeth under the whole heaven. I like just to drop down there to verse 28 at the end of the chapter. God, unto man, he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. And so this conscious awareness of truth, of what is right, of God, of fear of God, is wisdom. Wisdom is the fear of God, and a correct response to that is understanding. And so we could say you're a man of understanding when you engage with wisdom. You're a man of understanding when you apply wisdom in your experience. Back in Proverbs, she says that she will speak things that are plain. Wisdom is not a concoction of what if and what is it and where does it come from. That's not wisdom. That's something else playing with your brain. Wisdom is the voice of truth. It's the voice of God. She says, there is nothing froward about me in verse, I'm not sure which verse that is. In one of these verses she talks about, there is no frowardness in my lips. Really, she's saying there's nothing tricky there. You don't need to wonder. You don't need to fear that I'm messing with your brain. I'm trying to trick you. There's nothing froward or perverse. Nothing distorted in me. I'm pure. Number 4, wisdom is an exclusive agent. I'd like to read verse 10 to 13. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy in the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate. Wisdom is an exclusive agent. And I'd like you to note again how it says in verse 10, receive. It doesn't say go seek for her, go look for her. She's already there. You just need to accept. Receive my instruction. Wisdom is an exclusive agent. She will not dwell with another one in the house. Is that saying it too strong? You'll have to have her and only her. Wisdom will not share her habitation with other inferior interests. She says, anything else that you desire, you can't even compare that to me. All the things that may be desired. The boat, the hunting club, the 800 acres, or the hickory kitchen. You may desire that, but it's far inferior to what wisdom has to offer you. And if you're going to give your loyalty and allegiance to those things, wisdom isn't going to stay. She says, what I really share my habitation with is prudence in verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. or in other words, discretion. And you can see how those two go together. Wisdom and discretion. Wisdom is on par with discretion. There's something interesting in verse 12 where she says, I dwell with prudence and I find out knowledge of witty inventions. And to me, she's saying, I'm able to find out your mischievous ideas. I'm able to understand your ulterior motives. I know when you're sneaking something in on me. I wisdom dwell with prudence. And so you must choose to elevate her. When pride enters, she says in verse 13, I hate pride, arrogancy, and the evil way. The froward mouth, I hate them. I will not dwell with them. When pride enters, wisdom exits. When the froward mouth speaks, wisdom falls silent. And when evil boils, wisdom evaporates. She cannot stay. Number 5, wisdom is a substance of supervision and success. Verse 14 to 16. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. Wisdom is the substance of all supervision and success. And we could spend some time here, try not to spend too much time, but all the wisdom is the foundation of all success, I believe we could say. Whether it's Donald Trump or Putin or who it is, where their success is likely traced back to wisdom. Not to judge all men as godly, but there is an application of wisdom. She says in verse 14, counsel is mine, I have understanding. And so this morning, maybe you've been asked to teach Sunday school. Does it look overwhelming? Does it look like a big job? According to these verses, wisdom will assist you. Maybe you've been given a family of children. Wisdom has strength for the moment. Maybe you're called to judge a squabble or a family feud. Maybe you're called to judge a congregation of people. But take heart, because wisdom says, I have counsel for you if you only receive me. And so tune in, lean in, and embrace her. Number 6, wisdom is a reciprocal choice. Verse 17 to 21. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. Wisdom is a reciprocal choice, and if we think of reciprocal, we think of something going both ways. And so maybe it seems a bit lopsided to think that this is a mutually corresponding relationship. We can give to wisdom and wisdom can give to us, because really, what do we have to offer wisdom? What within you could you trade with wisdom for the equal value of her substance? And I think you'd have to conclude there's nothing really. And so wisdom is a reciprocal choice, basically in the sense that your acceptance of her is all you can give and all that she asks. Your acceptance of her is the positive response that she loves. And so in that sense, it's reciprocal. She is looking for acceptance and belonging. And so you give her that, she'll give you the the blessings of wisdom. She talks of an inheritance. If you give her a place to dwell, she will give you an inheritance. Number 7, wisdom is the sole possession of God. And this is just from verse 22. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. Wisdom is the sole possession of God. He owns wisdom. And that's a little bit hard to grasp, maybe. When you think of God, you try to wrap your mind around God, and you try to wrap your mind then around a God of wisdom. Where did he get this wisdom from? And we kind of just make the quick deduction that, well, it's all one and the same thing. God is wisdom, wisdom is God. But how did he get what is his? And my mind just kind of trips the breaker. They really are inseparable. But you know, it's interesting that Satan could oppose wisdom, but he could not overcome her. Satan could stand up before God, before wisdom, and rally against what it was, but he couldn't take possession of her. Wisdom was God's. So in a divulgence of anger, he engenders folly. That's why we read in Proverbs not only of Lady Wisdom, but Lady Folly. Because she is the alternative that Satan fathered in response to his inability to take wisdom. Number 8, wisdom's existence inhabits eternity. I'm going to read verse 23 to 29. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, wherever the earth was. When there was no depth, I was brought forth. When there was no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was, I brought forth. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was, I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above it, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth. Wisdom's existence inhabits eternity. And we're talking of eternity past to eternity future. You cannot go back far enough to find where wisdom starts, and I don't believe you can go forward far enough to find where it stops. She says, I was there before creation. Before things were formed, I was. And so before creation grew, wisdom knew. Before creation walked, wisdom talked. And before creation groaned, wisdom shone. She was there present at creation. Psalm 136 talks of God saying to him that by wisdom made the heavens. And in another psalm, it says, O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom how hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. And so she not only was present before creation, but in the structure and in the comprehensive design of creation, she was there. Number 9, wisdom's crowning delight was your very creation. Verse 30 and 31. Then I was by him as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the habitable part of his earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. And I think these are my favorite verses of the whole chapter. Wisdom's crowning delight was your very creation. She says, I rejoiced in the habitable part of the earth. And so when God designed the honeybee, wisdom said, it's so tiny and yet so complex. But she takes the sweet nectar of that flower and she creates a life-sustaining food, that honey. That's amazing. And wisdom said that it was good. When God created the horse, wisdom said, "He is so strong and compelling. Why, even the sons of men will be tempted to put their trust in him." And she said that it was good. When God created the chameleon, wisdom said, "What an amazing creature he is. He can even change his color or the pattern of his skin to mirror his mood and environment." And she said it was good. But when wisdom looked into the face of the first human being, I believe she said, "It is very good." And I believe at those moments, wisdom rejoiced and said, "This man is a wonderful rendition of my very own being." And as wisdom looked on Adam, possibly she turned up the dial and looked down through the lenses of time to you and me here today. And she said, "That is the place I want to be. It's a place for me to inhabit, but only if I'm granted permission. That's the place I want to inhabit, but only if I'm allowed to. My delight is with the sons of men." And the last point here I have is wisdom is the source of life and the endowment of divine favor. Verse 32. "Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All that hate me love death." And I'd like you to note again how the call is to hear and to hearken. The offering is there, no need to go looking. Just open your ears and accept. Wisdom is the source of life and the endowment of divine favor. Wisdom's children are wisdom's witnesses. They observe her ways, they heed her instruction, and they accept her counsels. They are hearing readily, watching daily, and waiting continually. And wisdom's children are blessed. She says they have found life. They have found divine favor. "Whoso findeth me findeth life and shall obtain favor of the Lord," verse 35. But most importantly, they have saved their own soul. "He that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul." And if you turn and reject, ignore me, it's finally not against me, it's against your own soul. And you really love death. So God bless you this morning and through the coming days as you hear the call of wisdom in your life and in your experience. God give you grace to hear, to follow, and to experience the rewards and the blessings. Let's kneel for prayer.